Welcome, everyone. This is Henrik Palmgren from the land of the Goths, Sweden. Glad to have you with us today. Thank you for tuning in to another Red Ice Radio program. Subscribe to our feeds and keep up to date with newly released programs, news, videos, and much more. RedIceCreations.com is the website. Well, friends and dear listeners, we will put focus back on Europe today and also Sweden, as we do regularly, a nation and a people in dire straits, as I'm sure you're aware. But the tide now is finally turning after decades of self-hatred, castrating liberalism, crippling leftism, and an anti-white political establishment that has no problem in stabbing their own people in the back. Our guest is Daniel Friberg. He holds a Master of Business Administration from the Gothenburg Business School. He is currently the CEO of the Swedish mining company Viking Mineral and a founding member of the Swedish metapolitical think tank Mot Pool. He has a long history within the Swedish rightist opposition and was one of the founders of the traditionalist publishing house Arkdos Media. He's also the author of the recently published Return of the Real Right, a handbook for the true opposition. Stay tuned for a very good conversation. Welcome, Daniel. It's a pleasure to have you with us. We've been in touch now for a few months, and we've wanted to do this for a while, so it's great to finally have you here. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
And thank you, Henrik. It's a great pleasure to be a guest on your excellent show, and I'm very happy to be here as well.
Thank you so much. Well, I almost don't know to where to begin. That there's just so much going on right now, and it's happening at an incredible pace. I mean, Europe is being literally transformed before our eyes. There is an invasion of our continent, and it's happening with greeting parties of our own people with balloons and singing. They are greeting their demographic demise and displacement with hugs and warm altruistic feelings of compassion, a sense of doing the right thing, I think, ultimately. But this is a symptom of something that's much larger, and this is something I want to return to a bit later and talk more about this in detail. But before we dive into that aspect, Donny, maybe you can tell us a bit about the work that you've been doing over the years. I mean, you're involved in a number of projects, not least, of course, Arkdos, the publishing house, Mot Pool, the think tank out of Sweden. You're, of course, an author, and I've just been going through your latest Högern kommer tillbaka, Swedish title, or the English title is The Return of the Real Right. You're also a musician. You have tons of other projects and things in the works that we'll get into a bit more later as well. But do you want to tell us just briefly how you got into all of this, how you ended up on this track?
Absolutely. Just a minor correction. I'm actually not a musician. I wish I was, but I'm not a musician. I'm many things, many great things, of course, but musician is not one of those things.
Oh, I thought Winglord was your project, I thought.
Well, actually, it's a friend of mine who's behind Winglord.
Ah, but, there you go. All right.
But
you made me believe it was your project. But
well, I wish it was, because it's a great project.
I like it.
And I hope we get the opportunity to maybe listen to one of the songs of Winglord.
We will. We definitely will play one of those. Yes.
That's great. And, where should I start? Well, if you're asking how I came into these kind of political beliefs, it's actually started at a very young age. I mean, I was, as most other Swedish people, which you are probably very well familiar with, Swedish is a very leftist country. It's probably the most extreme leftist country on earth, or in Europe at least. And it's not even the good kind of leftism. It's like the worst possible, horrible kind you can imagine. It's like cultural Marxism on steroids. And I was brought up by parents with leftist beliefs. And until I was about 12, I considered myself like an anti-racist and leftist. And I grew up in a very safe and very safe environment, a very pleasant neighborhood with a suburban utopia with only Swedish people. So I never really got in touch with the problems, the downside of this. These horrible leftist experiments going on in our once wonderful country until my teenage years when I started junior high and and therefore started another school from the school I went to during my first 6 years in school, which was a very safe and nice school with only Swedish kids and so forth. And suddenly I found myself in a multicultural environment with like 30% immigrants, mostly from Arab countries and from like Albania and Africa. And yeah,
yeah,
the demographic situation in Sweden. It was actually a shock to me, because suddenly from this very safe and nice environment, I found myself in a very hostile environment, which was very different from what I was used to. I was used to going to a school where the students or pupils behaved nicely and tried their best. Achieving the best they could in the classes and so forth to a school with total chaos, and it was basically a race war going on. I mean, total conflict and strife every day between Swedish students and the immigrant gangs.
Yep.
That was a huge. I mean, I came there with an open mind. I even remember when I was like 13 years old, I wore one of these anti-racist pins on my jacket to kind of show that I was a good person.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No.
And I actually tried to befriend some of these immigrants at my school. I spent some time getting to know them. And I realized, well, these guys are extremely different from us, and they don't really respect the Swedish way of life or Swedish culture or Swedish people in general, and they're basically not our friends. So I kind of stopped that experiment quickly and got back to socializing only with my own people, so to speak. But this was a huge eye-opener for me, because that was basically my first contact with multiculturalism for real. So I can really understand all of the naive Swedish people who at least for the past couple of decades really believed that multiculturalism was something good or something that could even function, because so many Swedish people never really got in touch with the reality of it, and they of course were never offered a truthful image of it through the Swedish mass media. I mean, the Swedish mass media has done their best to hide all the negative effects of multiculturalism from the Swedish people for so long, and they are still doing it, and that they are doing it in a very extreme way that I think trumps every other media in all the world, basically. I mean,
you're right.
Their audacity is like extreme. I mean, for example, case in point, 8 immigrants from like Gambia or something rapes a woman at a ferry to Finland. Like I thought it was 5 years ago, maybe. The Swedish daily newspapers portrayed this as, okay, 8 Swedish men raped an innocent woman, and they showed these silhouette pictures of the perpetrators, and they all of the silhouettes looked like extremely Germanic, like SS soldiers, basically, with like big chiseled chins, and all of them had like Swedish fake names under them.
Mm-hmm.
So the readership got the impression that, oh, these are like super Aryan Nazis committing these horrible rapes. and later when the alternative media, which fortunately is very strong in Sweden, and it has been growing immensely during the last few years, and as a result of the total dishonesty of the mass media in Sweden, I would say, and also of course due to the creativity and capacity for innovation among many Swedish dissidents who are behind all of these alternative media projects. But thanks to these, at least the truth always comes out to an increasing number, to a growing audience. And in this case, it was so hilarious, because when you saw the real photos of these 8 Africans who perpetrated this rape, they looked like real stereotypes of like Gambians, and when you saw these pictures and compared it to the newspaper articles with the silhouettes, it looked like well, it looked extremely funny, and it really illustrates my point about the total dishonesty and total corruption of the Swedish mass media when it comes to fooling the Swedish people into thinking that multiculturalism is good and nice.
Yeah.
And
Oh yeah. And it's not like that's one the one single example. This is like happening every single time, and the media is such a culprit in portraying that this somehow is all that what's happening in our country is all rainbows and unicorns, but the reality is just so much different, you know.
yeah, it's like the total opposite. I mean, Sweden is the second it's the second rape capital of the world, basically. I mean, we have the we, I think we during recent years we have risen to number two among countries when it comes to rapes per capita,
Yeah.
and number one is like Zimbabwe or South
I think it was,
Africa or
Lesotho or something like that, you know? Yeah.
Lesotho, yeah, like a total war zone. That's
Yeah.
the only country that is worse than Sweden when it comes to rapes per capita. And it kind of proves that maybe multiculturalism is not a great idea.
No. Well, the thing is that when we grow up in the environment that you just mentioned, and I recognize myself very much in that too. My experiences was very much the same, not in school, but in other settings where I got in touch with non-Swedish people, and I realized what kind of level of hostility and violence that existed there. And I had a cognitive dissonance for the longest time where I couldn't quite wrap my head around that, and neither could many of my friends. And it took me years to just kind of even realize that there are differences between people, because you don't think like that when you're young. That it's true. I mean, you literally you don't judge people on that basis. It's not until you grow up later and really when you become yourself, and when this kind of when you realize who you are yourself, that you can make these kind of determinations. But what happened from that point on for you?
Yeah, and actually, just briefly commenting on what you just said, that's a funny thing because they always accuse us of being prejudiced, and
Exactly. Yeah.
it's only prejudice, and it's so horrible that we are so prejudiced against these poor non-Europeans. But that's the total opposite. I mean, I when I confronted this new situation with immigrants and so forth, I was without any prejudice whatsoever. I mean, all my political beliefs are based on actual personal experiences and my own studies. I mean, I've done some quite extensive research into these subjects when I started to awake, if you will, on these topics. And so it's that's also one of the most successful popular lies or myths from the left, that all opposition to immigration or multiculturalism or any of their crazy experiments is like based on prejudice. It's quite the opposite. It's based on real experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, from that point on, I started to become. I think I always, even though during my early years, due to my upbringing and so forth, and living in a totally Swedish environment, I did not really think about these issues in a political way. I think I've always had a sort of sense of ethnic identity or ethnic consciousness, and which was kind of brought to life by these real life experiences or multiculturalism and its many problems, and well, and many of my peers had the same experiences, as we basically started like banding together and organizing. I mean, it was on a very childish and amateurish level, of course, but we started handing out leaflets for the early Sweden Democrats, for example, in our school, and We even printed our own very amateurish material. I remember I had recently gotten my first computer because I had a part-time job as an IT administrator during even at that early age. So I got some really good computer equipment, and including a laser printer. So I printed some leaflets and posters on my own that we kind of put up all over my junior high school. So that was my earliest political activism. And but it wasn't until I turned maybe 18 until I really came to the point that where I where I kind of I came to a turning point in my life, basically. Mm-hmm. I saw that many of the other Swedish friends of mine, they were not really doing any constructive with their. I mean, they had the right political ideas in some sense. I mean, they understood the basics that, okay, immigration is horrible and we have to do something about it. But they weren't really doing much use. So I kind of came to some sort of. To a point in my life where I asked myself, okay, either I quit this altogether because it will obviously bring me lots of social problems and it will be harmful for my career, and I had a lot of pressure from my family and relatives to kind of get away from all the political stuff and just focus on my education and so forth. What I heard from my family and relatives was that, well, okay, we can understand the problems, but it's not your responsibility. You don't have to do this.
Right.
You should focus on yourself. And I think this is what pretty much many parents tell their kids.
Yeah.
Out of concern. And I was actually considering for a brief moment, maybe that is what I should do. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this properly and seriously, and I'm going to dedicate my life to it, to really making a change. Obviously, I choose the latter after giving it some serious thought. And I, and since then, I've been pretty much dedicated to the cause getting Sweden back to normal again, and Europe as well, of course, in a wider perspective. And I began by starting up this because during that time, the opposition in Sweden was in a very bad shape, much due to the evil propaganda of mass media, malicious propaganda, where they kind of highlighted the worst aspects of the opposition, like skinheads and stuff like that, and kind of promoted them and promoted that lifestyle. Of course, they did it as a sort of negative propaganda, but they also made it seem cool to lure young people into that subculture to kind of disarm the opposition.
Exactly. To kind of make it, turning it into that stereotype that's also very easily to, it's easy to criticize it. It's easy for then the rest of Sweden to kind of neglect that as some kind of valid criticism of the direction of the country, you know?
Exactly. So what the left did during this period, which was the mid-90s, was that, okay, now we can see some opposition to immigration. So what will we do with this? Yeah, we will turn this into some sort of harmless opposition. That consists of stupid people with a lot of stupid attributes that will scare away normal and intelligent people, and which will make them very easy to demonize and paint out as a very big threat to democracy or whatever. And that they succeeded very well with this. And I witnessed it firsthand, and I understood from the beginning what they were doing, and I felt a bit powerless because I couldn't prevent it because their power was so strong back then, because this was before the internet had really become like everyone's a part of everyone's life. So this was during a time period where the tabloids had like, and the TV channels, of course, had like total control over the minds of the people and over the flow of information. So it was a very frustrating time for me, but I made it like one of my life goals to, okay, I will try my best to transform this opposition into something constructive and try to make young Swedish people reacting, which, I mean, having a valid reaction to these horrible crimes being committed against our people and turning their energy into like a positive force. So my first real serious political activity was to start up a small publishing company called Alternative Media. It was in 97, and we published a magazine called Framtid, which means future in Swedish, and which was its purpose, one of its main purposes, was to kind of be a counterbalance all of these other fanzines or magazines that existed at the time, which like contained all of these negative aspects, which I saw as a very big problem for the opposition to succeed. For example, Third Reich nostalgia, Skinhead romanticism, too much focus on like white power music and stuff like that. So I basically created a magazine that was completely devoid of all that. It was like a pretty serious, like, naturalist magazine focusing on criticizing immigration and doing it in an intellectual way, at least as intellectual as was possible for a person like 18 years old to accomplish with his friends. I still think we managed to make some sort of impact, because even though we only managed to publish three issues, we actually published the last two issues in a very large quantity, and we sent them out for free to all high school last year high school students in Gothenburg and Stockholm at all the theoretical programs. So we printed like over 21,000 copies of those and
oh, great. Yeah.
Distributed them for free, and we actually managed to get a few people who would later prove very important to our cause. We kind of woke them up with this wider distribution, which made me very happy, because that was like the first real concrete result I saw from all of this work and all of this money we spent, because I spent basically all my savings on this and like thousands of hours of work, and it was for a while very unfulfilling, because the results were not at all what I expected. But later on, like 1 year later or 2 years later, and even later than that, slowly I managed to see some real results when people came up to me and told me, oh, actually it was because I got this magazine from you in my mailbox that I finally understood the problems of society and managed to make a decision to take a stand and get active. So so yeah, that was the reward, and it was totally worth it, because it was some very high quality people that decided to get active due to this. So yeah,
very good. Well, I mean, that's really where it's at, of you know, long-term thinking and thinking about something which can last over time, and also not just be something which entirely is just a reaction to something, because then we'll just end up in this pendulum that we've been in for such a long time now of swinging back and forth between, well, I mean, the political spectrum in Sweden is very narrow anyway, but despite that, it does tend to swing back and forth between the so-called conservative forces and social democrats, although the social democrats, of course, in previous has had a lot of power for a long time in Sweden, as people might know. We've spoken about that in the past here, but let's talk a bit more about the level of where this fight, in your opinion, should take place, the political struggle, where that should occur, and how we, you know, can awaken not only Swedish people but also European people. This is a huge question, naturally, but it's something that you do address in your latest book, The Return of the Real Right, of kind of breaking down both the sort of not fake opposition, but kind of controlled or neutered opposition of the so-called right or the conservatives. I think Sweden is a perfect example of that, of the moderate party, of what they've represented. And then we have another side to that, which is, of course, the left and whatnot. But tell us a bit more about, you know, how you view what needs to happen for people to really build an opposition to the left, Daniel.
Yeah, that's a very valid question. And first of all, I mean, I think we have to understand that all of us have different roles in this struggle. I mean, of course, just as you and most of our listeners, I don't believe in equality and that everyone is the same. I believe we are quite the opposite. We are very different, and all of us have different roles to play in this. And you should basically focus on doing what you're good at, what you have a natural talent for. And everyone can actually do something. I know it sounds a little bit cliche, but I mean, everyone has a role to play, and I think everyone, for us to create an efficient opposition to this madness and basically genocide going on is to find our proper roles. Doing what we all do best, and focus on that, and becoming even better in those areas. For example, your radio is an excellent initiative, and you obviously have a talent for this. And so I think it's perfect that you focus on this. And for me, I mean, publishing and writing articles and creating like websites for discussion of ideas and basically I think we're both in the same area but with just different mediums. I mean, we right. both work in the field of metapolitics, which I think is the most important field and unfortunately also the most neglected field of the real right and the opposition during the recent 70 years basically. And we left that field completely open to our enemies of the left. They have totally dominated the fields of metapolitics and cultural struggle, and they are. And today we can see the result of this, which is like total chaos, total displacement of the West, at least the Western European populations, and gender studies, and all sorts of crazy things going on. But,
I know.
And I think it's time that we get our act together, which I actually feel that we are finally doing. We are getting our act together. We are beginning to be more professional, more efficient, reaching out to much more people than we ever did before, in all sorts of way. When it comes to book publishing, for example, Arctus, which is a very close example for me to relate to. Our book sales have been increasing with like 50% per year since we founded the company 5 years ago, and we've published over 100 book titles so far. And we see a constantly growing interest, even though the book market as a whole is kind of dying due to like people becoming more decadent and reading less books. The demand for our kind of books, which I think is very, very inspiring, increases in spite of this decadence of liberal modernity, where people rather play video games and watch movies than read proper books. The demand for our books and the sales of our books promoting our ideas are still growing consistently. As I said, with 50% per year in as a mean, and that is a pretty rapid growth, and there are lots and lots of more authors contacting us like every month than the month before, and so forth. So we can see a really surge in interest in our ideas, and Which is, of course, not a coincidence, because the destruction of Europe, the ongoing destruction of Europe, or attempt at destroying Europe, is something that is becoming increasingly clear to many people. And the natural reaction, of course, unless you're a total coward, is to want to do something about it. And the first step is to educate yourself and get in touch with, like, information sources like Red Eyes Radio, like books from Arctus, or like articles from other websites similar to ours. I don't think if you notice this, but I can definitely see a very clear increase in interest in what we have to say.
Oh yeah, I mean, certainly that's just how it goes. And why do you think that is? I mean, is the left's own doing? Are they doing the heavy lifting, so to speak, for us? Because the left has been in the driver's seat now for such a long time, and people are they're able to see now where they truly are taking us, and things are just utterly crumbling. They're falling apart. Is that the reason why the right is winning, and why the left kind of is dying, or is more to it than that?
Well, I would say it's that is, of course, a major part of the reason, definitely. I mean, unless you're completely blind or are lucky enough to live totally isolated from the rest of Western European society, I mean, you can see the problems clearly. And unless you're extremely stupid or brainwashed, you also can see the problems may want to actually do something about them, and so yes, of course. I mean, the left is doing some of the heavy lifting for us, because their utopia basically is becoming a reality. It has become a reality right in front of our eyes, and it's not really a utopia. It's a nightmare. And many people, I mean, all normal people, realize this when they are confronted by it. So of course, that is a very big part of the explanation. But I would say that another major part of the explanation of our increasing success is our increasing professionalism. We are becoming better at what we do. We are becoming more professional. And we also have the internet. I mean, people are giving up on the old media forms. People read less paper newspapers. They have a tendency to read news online instead, which means that we can compete on a more equal footing with the established mainstream media, and we can actually compete, because we are becoming professional enough to be competitive. When immense funding and resources are no longer a prerequisite to actually establish your own media channel, and right. it's only about knowledge and professionalism and intelligence. We're basically on an equal footing. We even have an advantage, because we don't have to lie. We can tell people the truth.
Well, it's true, exactly. I mean, it's worth pointing out again, but you know, the utter lies in the media right now is they're so detached from reality. And sometimes I wonder, you know, what actually drives a lot of the people, the journalists and whatnot, that I think partially some of them they're truly so ideologically, you know, blinded by their own righteousness, that they simply just believe that they're right and refuse to watch reality. On the other hand, you do have people that are actively you know, pushing towards the direction that we see now, at least politicians and think tanks and lobby groups. I mean, we have, I don't know how many, both quotes and from their own words, of people that we've dug out in the last few years, from, you know, Peter Sutherland to, you know, Tony Blair and Sarkozy. And you do have the Barbara Spectors, of course, and the Gregory Gysi and all these people. Their response, the political elite, these people, they have a very different approach to this, than regular people do, who are simply responding to, like, let's say, what we see now with the so-called immigration crisis. Well, it's really an invasion. That's what it is. But they're responding to it that this is something good. We're helping these people. But if we couple that together, what the elites are saying, that's a very different picture, isn't it?
It certainly is. And it's, yeah, it's interesting that you bring this up because, it's, that they are becoming more and more open with what the true agenda is. I mean, Barbara Spector is, of course, like the most extreme example, perhaps, but there are lots of others similar to her.
Yes, there sure are.
And they don't really make any attempt whatsoever at hiding what the purpose of this is. It's not about helping people. It's about destroying Europe. That is what it's about for these people. But we have to remember that this is a small minority. They are, of course, very influential, disproportionately influential, unfortunately, which I hope we will be able to change during the coming decades. But yes, it's the elites have their agenda, and the like leftist journalists are either ideologically blinded by their crazy, crazy leftist cultural Marxist ideology, which and we also have the opportunists, of course, which is I would say maybe the majority of journalists in the Western Europe are belong to this latter category. I mean, the opportunists, they just write whatever their bosses tell them to, because otherwise they would be out of their jobs. And they don't really care that much about anyone but themselves. They're selfish people trying to make a living. As soon as the pendulum swings, they will quickly change the tune of their writings. I'm quite sure of that.
And some are already, aren't they? They've kind of, you know, switched sides, if you will, and they've heavily gone after those journalists. It's quite fun. I think you brought this up before, but the kind of battles, if you will, that goes on within the journalist world in Sweden are quite unique in the way that they go after each other, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a sign of desperation from the most extreme leftist journalist elite, because they have this. They have this extreme urge to punish those who dare to walk outside of the boundaries of the extremely leftist discourse, allowed discourse in Sweden, which might work maybe in a couple of instances, but it won't work for long. I would say maybe for give it a couple of years and the barrier has been completely erased, I think.
So
we are standing at the beginning of a paradigm shift, I would say, in all over Europe, of course, and Sweden is no exception. Only that since Sweden is so from the beginning is so extremely leftist, I think the effects of this paradigm shift is going to be much more noticeable in Sweden.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you do take a very, very positive tone in your latest book, and it's I'm very glad reading that as well. And I feel that it's not just you saying that. There is an energy, there is a kind of a surge behind that you're surfing on when you write this in the way that you do. And I think one of the important points that you bring up as well is that the direction that we need to take, that we want to take, is something that can't just be forced on people either. This is what the left has been doing now, at least very much in the recent years, and that's also partially why it's failing, as you said. The more they push, the more resistance people set up to this. But the very aspect that there needs to be a foundational understanding for why you want to go in the direction that you do, that somehow you can't just, you know, take over a political system and then have this top-down enforcement of that upon people. There needs to be a, as you said now, metapolitical, a cultural dialogue that arises from the bottom and up to the top, that politics is ultimately an expression of something different. Politics is not something that you go into, to enforce it on people. And that's something that you raise in the book, which I think is incredibly important. And that's really at the heart of metapolitics, that how, you know, which goes to the question of how do we influence that cultural dialogue, the discourse of what is acceptable, of morals and all that. I mean, it's a very difficult question, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. I think you're spot on with what you just said about the definition of metapolitics. If you allow me, I'll just quote a short paragraph from my book which explains what it's all about, that is: metapolitics is a war of social transformation in terms of worldview, thought, and culture. Any parliamentary struggle must be preceded, legitimized, and supported by a metapolitical struggle. Metapolitics, at its best, reduces parliamentarism to a question of formalities, which is actually what we have seen in Sweden. Due to the successful metapolitics of the left, we suddenly find ourselves having 7 or maybe even 8, depending on how strict you are, left-wing parties in the parliament. I mean, all our parties are basically left-wing because they are totally adhering to the leftist worldview and accepting the leftist terminology, and they are subscribing to cultural Marxism and feminism and everything, the whole package, and they are adapting to it. And some of them might call themselves like right wing. Well, basically, that's almost no longer the case in Sweden, which further illustrates my point that Sweden is the most extreme leftist country in the world, because no party even dares to call itself right wing anymore, which is kind of unique.
Yeah, it is.
That they call themselves like centrist and liberal and blah blah blah.
Remember that with the moderate party, they like the New Workers Party. You know, they changed their slogans and they try to, and they're basically just chasing after. I mean, they are, in the true sense of the word, they are cuckservatives. They're really just chasing after what the left has been pushing just a couple of years earlier, and basically trying to bring that into motion and trying to ride on the popularity wave of those things as well. They offer no real opposition to what the left is doing.
No, quite the opposite. They are following the lead of the leftists who are setting the agenda through their control of the media and the culture, and the parties only differ in like minor, totally irrelevant and minor issues. They all agree on the major questions. I mean, everyone is in favor of transforming Sweden into like a third world country by having the world's most extreme mass immigration and so forth. The only party that puts up a little bit of resistance against this is the Sweden Democrats. Although we can see an ongoing shift to the left from them as well, because they haven't, unfortunately, and that's something that really disappoints me with their leadership, because they should know better, especially their chief ideologue, Mattias Karlsson, who is the real power in the party, to be honest. Because he has been reading my websites for many years. He even participated once in a very good interview, and I know that he has been reading a lot of our books as well. So he should really know better, but not even him. I mean, because he is the one who makes the major decisions in the party. He's actually doing the exact opposite of what would be a proper metapolitical strategy for a opposition party who wants to save Sweden or like restore order again, and counteract the crazy and destructive leftist experiments. He's actually adapting to their terminology. He even uses their terms himself to attack rivals within his own party, and also to attack rivals within the Swedish the quite bustling Swedish alternative media spectrum
Yes.
by labeling them like neo-fascists and racist and he even tries to reform his party and relabel it into an anti-racist
Oh, okay.
centrist party,
Oh my
which is
God.
like
Stop cucking out, Matthias. Come on.
He's a real conservative, and he should be know better because so he's a huge disappointment actually, and I hope he finds some sense eventually.
Well,
I don't have high hopes,
because
but
what's
still.
strange about that is that they haven't gained the popularity that they have by adapting to the norm. They've gained it up to this point as well because they are offering an alternative. So why try to adjust itself to their political enemies that are they're never going to accept them anyway? That's what's so boggling here, that they, I mean, they'll continue to call them Nazis and fascists and, you know, everything else they can find, you know, under the rug, basically to fling at them to prevent them. And yet, despite that, instead of then, I'm not saying that they should agree with those terms that they're flung at them, but basically own it and just say, you know, we offer up a real opposition. We don't have to, you know, stand in defense to all the accusations you fling at us. In fact, it's you guys who need to answer for why the country has gone to, you know, shit in the last few years. But this is not happening, you know?
Exactly. They should be much more on the offense because the left is totally bankrupt, like morally, ideologically, and they are in a state of retreat. So this is the right time to be more aggressive. But instead, he does quite the opposite. He tries to placate them and try to be friends with them. And he even went so far as to send a long, very very. Very embarrassing email to the Swedish the major Swedish state-sponsored anti-racist magazine and foundation. It's called Expo. It's like the Swedish equivalent of like British Searchlight or American ADL. And he basically wrote a very long embarrassing email to them where he said, Merry Christmas, and I really like what you're doing, and I think we agree on a lot of points. For example, our mutual hatred of racism and Nazism and all of these horrible people, and maybe we can find some way to cooperate because I have some problems with other peoples on the other people on the right who I think are trying to influence our membership, and he was referring to multiple my project, of
Right.
course.
Yeah.
Have you read the actual email?
I did. I did, and it's really remarkable. I mean, you guys have done a good overview not only of that particular case but others similar, really, of what has happened in Sweden in terms of you know, persecution by journalists. You have some great articles, and you repost those in the book as well, or reiterate those in terms of how to deal with some of this and some of your suggestions to people who get targeted by these groups and what they can say. And I mean, we had that case of journalists showing up on people's front doors, sticking a camera in their faces and, you know, accusing them of, you know, this, that, and the other for the fact that they've had simply voiced their opinions in comments fields on certain websites. I mean, that's unprecedented as far as I know.
Yeah, it's crazy, and my major point that I'm really trying to get across to as many people as possible, including the retard Matthias Karlsson, is that you can't compromise or negotiate with your enemies. And I mean, Expo, their main purpose is to destroy the Sweden Democrats, and he believes he can start cooperating with them. That's That's plain stupidity. It's really embarrassing. But my main point, which I also really stress a lot in my book, is that don't dignify these left-wing extremist journalists with any kind of, I mean, decent response or answering their silly questions when they ask why you dare to criticize immigration online or whatever. You should just treat them like the trash they are. You should be totally uncompromising. You can't negotiate with your enemy. That's a major point.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Donnie, we have a lot more to discuss, and time has just flown by here in the first segment. We have a lot more we're going to get into here in the second hour. But before we do that, let's just kind of spend a few minutes here talking about the various things that you have, both ongoing and upcoming. First of all, you know, give us some of the details about Arctos. There's, you know, as you said, tons of titles there. And do make sure that we kind of talk a bit about your latest book as well, how people can get copies of that, and then we can move on and talk more about some of your other projects. But really, just kind of the floor is yours here to just tell us about what you have going on and plug away at the things that you that you've been working on the last few years.
Sure. That's a lot of things to cover in just a few minutes. But yeah, I'll try my best. But of course, naturally, I would like as many as possible to really order my book and read it. I think you'll find a lot of useful advice there that will make your not only your private life but also your political activism much easier and much more efficient.
There's some great suggestions in the book, by the way. I really enjoyed it. It's well written, and you know, I went through the Swedish version of this, but it's going to be available. It is available now in Swedish, but it's going to be available soon here in English too, right?
Yeah, exactly. The English edition is coming out in 3 weeks, and after that, we also have four other editions in French, German, Spanish, and actually Hungarian as well. Maybe a couple of months after that. So yeah, we're hard at work bringing this, making this book available in as many languages as possible. But yeah, keep an eye out for the English version. I've already started promoting it on my personal Facebook page, which you could follow if you want to keep up to date. And the address to that is, of course, facebook.com. And then my name, Daniel Friberg Arctos. That's a whole address.
We'll have that up too, by the way, on the website, so people can click through easily from there and get to your page.
Yeah. That would be great, because it already contains a lot of promotional material for the English edition, including lots of quotes and so forth. So anyone interested in my book should definitely follow that page. And in terms of other publications, when it comes to Arctos, we recently published our first book by a very great man, which I'm actually very proud to have been able to publish. It's called The Shock of History, and it's written by Dominic Venner, who most people should be familiar with. It's a man who shot himself in the Notre Dame a while ago, truly a great man and a great author, and I think everyone should read his book. It came out just like 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, so It's out there in English, so that is something I would definitely recommend for everyone. It's a very good starter book for people who wants to get into the general ideas of the new and growing opposition in Europe and the new right in general. And our next upcoming title, which will be out in 2 weeks, will be another book by Julius Evola, the Italian traditionalist philosopher, which I also hope that many of you are already familiar with. We've published quite a lot of books by him so far, and it's basically a traditionalist critique of fascism, It's very interesting because what people are used to just, I mean, fascism is probably the most abused concept in recent decades, because that is the slur that the left in Europe at least uses against pretty much everything they hate.
Yeah.
No matter if you're just anti-feminist or if you're like anti-immigration, you're basically a fascist. Or well, if they can't make it credible that you're a fascist, then you're a so-called neo-fascist, which is the latest popular word, which Mattias Karlsson, of course, has done a very, very good job with promoting in Sweden. Yeah, that book I would definitely recommend. It's one of the better and more important works by Julius Evola, and it will be out in 2 weeks. And also, furthermore, we have this new really exciting website coming up. I'm sure all of you are familiar with the various English new right-oriented websites. Available, for example, Countercurrents, Radix, Alternative Right, and so forth. Takis Magazine, and this is something like that. But it's a website in English, but it's created by Europeans from a European perspective, and we already have most of the big names of the European New Right on board with this, and we have lots of translators working with making recent articles and texts by the most formidable thinkers of the European New Right available in English on this site. And the website address is rightonnet. And when this program is being broadcast, it will be actually on the same day that the site has been launched, so you will actually be able to access it right away.
Excellent.
I hope all of you will enjoy it, and also that some of you will even subscribe to our premium membership, which I'm sure you will find worth your while.
Yeah, it's necessary. We talked about that a little bit before we started up here, but just the idea that kind of having a website that's still in English, because we do still have the language barriers. I'm sad to say I don't speak French. My German is, maybe a little bit here. I can understand. I studied it in school, but there's a lot of still that barrier within the within Europe, unfortunately, and I feel that that's a big problem. A lot of the French thinkers, I mean, we were going to have Alain de Benoist on the program, but, you know, he couldn't do English. He preferred not to do that, and so that's a big problem. So something like this that can at least take in all those works and kind of translate them into English, make it palatable to more people, but still from a European perspective, is, I think, highly necessary at this time and a very good idea.
Yeah, absolutely, especially since most of the exciting things, and I'm now using exciting in the broadest sense of the word, going on politically, is actually taking place here in Europe. So there is definitely a need for a website in English, kind of reporting about all of these exciting events and so forth. So yeah, I think the time is right, and there's a totally empty niche for us to fill, a void to that needs to be filled, and which we will have filled by the time you hear this. So
very good, very good. Now tell us about Winglord a bit as well. We're going to play a song here in just a little bit. Tell us about that project.
Yeah, actually, Winglord, it's a Swedish neo-folk project, basically neo-folk / neoclassical. It's a couple of friends of mine from the professional music scene, and hence the anonymity of the people buying it, because the situation in Sweden, especially within the artistic and musical scene, is of course even worse than in most other segments of the economy. So you would probably soon find yourself out of a job if you were right wing and yeah, openly right-wing within any of these fields. But anyways, it's some good friends of mine behind this, and I really enjoy it myself. It's very cinematic. It's very heroic. It's very inspiring. I think this is the kind of music that should be the proper soundtrack to the uprising, to the opposition growing in Europe right now, because it kind of awakens the right kind of feelings. It seems very appropriate for what we are trying to convey. I mean, politically and ideologically and culturally. So, yeah.
Very good.
I can recommend it to everyone.
Absolutely. We'll play a little bit here in a bit. And of course, I also want to make sure we mentioned for our Swedish-speaking audience, motpool.nu, the think tank, if you will. A lot of material published there in Swedish, a lot of good thought, and a lot of things we've been discussing here today, of course, is published there for our Swedish audience. Anything else you want to mention about that site?
Well, we are very soon, I mean, in about 6 months, we actually celebrate our 10-year anniversary. So we've been around for quite some time, and we've built up quite an impressive database of articles. I think we're up to like 3,500 articles right now, and it's like, well, high-quality stuff, and I'm sure all the Swedish listeners who visit this site will find a lot of interesting stuff there. If you're looking for more theoretical things and really good analysis of various events, I would recommend the writer Joachim Andersson, especially. He's like the grand old man of the Swedish New Right. And if you're looking for more practical advice on what to do here and now, I would recommend the articles by myself. So, yeah.
All right.
Pretty much.
Very, very good. Websites, once more here then before we wrap up, motpool.nu, writeon.net, arctos.com, and also check out Daniel Fredberg Arctos on Facebook. All the links up on our website. Stay with us, folks. Stay with us, Daniel. We'll be right back with the second hour coming up.
For decades, we've been indoctrinated with self-contempt and guilt. We've been deceived into giving our own nations away to strangers. And now, our civilization is falling apart. Our pride is lost. Our leaders have betrayed us. They do not serve us anymore. But we will not surrender. We will not give in. We have a right to be here. Fight for it. And we will live. Beyond our reach have been tearing down our culture from within. Our families are scattered. Our faith is scorned. Our wealth is being stolen right before our eyes. We've been told that we do not exist as a people. This is how slaves are made. But we will not surrender. We will not give in. We have a right to be here. Fight for it. And we will live. Never surrender. our blood, we will live.
In the second hour, we cut straight to the chase and break down the invasion of Europe, the pathological altruism behind it, the mentality of the elite that has enabled it. We speak about why this is happening, who's behind it, and what we can do to stop it. We also speak more about strategy, why we are winning, and why they are losing, why more and more people are waking up and realizing what the elites are doing, and also how to break out of that spell, how to get people out of the cult of self-hatred that the left wing has endorsed now for decades, where they have turned virtue into looking down on your own. I mean, mind control and conditioning are everyday occurrences within this cult. The people are trapped in its hex. They don't think for themselves, they just repeat what the talking points are, and they have been trained like dogs, conditioned to shame and try to smack people back in line with words. And this is only, of course, to those Europeans who stand up, not only for themselves, but for their own people, for their own culture, but also those who have learned that favoring our own first is not only nature and the most natural and healthy thing in the world you can do, to show positive discrimination, just as every other group and people does. And this is just an endless hypocrisy. But as we know, this has nothing to do with reason, it has nothing to do with logic, it has nothing to do with fairness or tolerance. We also continue to speak more about the importance of metapolitics, his book about the return of the right and how the alt-right or the new right differs from traditional conservatism and what people believe is the right. Much more is coming up with Daniel Fridberg, so don't miss it. As your regular listeners know, the first hour is always free, sometimes both. We have no ads, no commercial interruptions, and when you want to hear more of this and all our previous programs, sign up for membership. The website is redicemembers.com, where we have our full archives stuffed to the brim, available, waiting for you. It's only €5 per month. Sign up for a 3-month, 6-month, or 9-month subscription, and you get access to over 1,000 ready programs, insight videos, films, and other episodes as well. We also have 1-year or 2-year subscriptions available if you want to make that extra push with us towards helping us to expand in our coverage as well. Thank you so much for subscribing and helping us out. We release 3 new shows a week, and this includes our Radio 314 shows as well, and we're moving towards producing more and more videos, so do consider helping us out. Upcoming, we have a roundtable with Kevin MacDonald, Tim Murdoch, and John Friend. Then after that, we have Andrew Arnheimer, Tan Staffel, and many more. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back with the second hour with Daniel Fridberg. Thank you so much for listening.